on a congressional update. So, David, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. It's been a while since I've seen most of you in person, and I know there are a number of folks that are new on the council that I haven't met in person, so I'm sorry I'm not up there. I also love snow, so I kind of wish I were up there with you all. For those that don't know me, my name's Dave Whaley. I work for the Council Coordination Committee, which means I work for all eight of the councils, which means I work for you. So I do a monthly report that lists some of the hearings that have been held, links to previous hearings, a list of legislation that's been introduced that might be of interest, and some other things. I think all of the council members get it. I think Janice does a really nice job of sending out to you. But if any of you have some suggestions or comments on how to make that report work better for you, please let me know. It's a living document, so I want to make it work. To give you a little bit of my background, I worked on the House side on Capitol Hill for 32 years. I covered fishery and ocean issues for about 20 of those years. I was a Republican staffer for originally the House Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee. Some of you old timers might remember that committee. And then I worked for the House Natural Resources Committee. I have to tell you that things are a lot more partisan now than when I was on the Hill. And there are times where I even have trouble navigating what's going on up there. So don't feel bad if you don't understand what's going on Capitol Hill these days. Just to give you a brief update on COVID, as with everybody else, with all of you, hearings are either hybrid or virtual at this point. The Senate has been able to do some in-person hearings, which has been interesting. But on the House side, most of the hearings have either been hybrid or virtual. The Capitol complex is pretty much in lockdown. There are ways to get in, but it's not easy. My understanding is the restrictions on getting into the Capitol complex may last at least until June, and some people are saying might last as long as September. So if you have thoughts of coming to see your congressman or senator here in Washington, I think it's probably more likely you'll see him at home. I'm going to give you a brief civics lesson. I do this every time I talk to one of the councils. I know most of you know a little bit about how government works, but doesn't hurt to have a refresher. Every Congress lasts 2 years. Right now, we're in the second year of the 117th Congress. And at the end of every Congress, the slate is wiped clean. It's like at the end of the class, the teacher erases what was on the blackboard, and we're back to square one. So the memories remain, but all the bills that were introduced this Congress as of January 1st, 2023 will have to be reintroduced to be considered. If you want, you can go back, and I don't know if any of you remember Schoolhouse Rock, but there's one on YouTube called I Am a Bill on Capitol Hill. It's pretty interesting and actually very informative. So to go back to civics, the party that controls either the House or the Senate controls the committees, which means they get the chairmanship, they control the staff slots, they control the agenda, they determine what hearings get held, they decide which witnesses get invited, and they decide what bills get moved. So control of the House or the Senate is pretty important for what the committees do and what bills get moved. Generally, the committee ratios are based on the ratio in the full House or the full Senate. Right now, the Senate is 50-50, but the vice president can control the Senate with tie votes. So that means the Democrats are in control. In the House, the split is currently 222 to 212. So it's a 5-vote swing. So in both houses, it's a pretty tight margin. So you would think people would be working together to get things done. That doesn't seem to be the case. As I mentioned, we have an upcoming election in November. It's very likely that either the House or the Senate will flip. And again, the end of the Congress, we go back to square one on bills that have been introduced. So in January of 2023, if there are new ratios in the House and Senate, we'll see a lot of change on the committees as well. Let's talk money. Everything I'm going to tell you about appropriations could change tomorrow, but here's what I know. I think yesterday Dr. Hare talked a little bit about how the agency funds are affected when Congress does not enact a full year appropriation bill. Currently, we're in fiscal FY 2022, which runs, currently the funding will run through February 18th. And that's due to two continuing resolutions. The fiscal year runs until September 31st. As I mentioned, it's an election year, and the later Congress waits to enact appropriations, the more politics is going to get in the way. So if this were a normal year between now and September 31st, Congress would finish the FY 2022 appropriations bills and at least have a good start for FY 2023. From what I'm being told, it's likely Congress is going to do another continuing appropriation that'll take us through the end of the year, not the fiscal year, but end of the year, and get us past the election. Now, having said that, I've heard there are some senators that have been meeting privately, but as I understand, House members and House staff have not been meeting. It's unlikely there's going to be any movement on individual appropriation bills before September 31st. Now, that could change as we get toward the end of the current continuing resolution in February, in 2 weeks. We might see some action, but I think it's unlikely. Okay, back to Civics 101. House members are elected for 2 years. That means that the entire House of Representatives is up for re-election. We've got a number of retirements, which is going to open up a lot of seats. And as a result of the census in 2020, there's a lot of redistricting going on. A number of states are losing seats and a number of states are gaining seats. There's not going to be any change in New England, so you're safe from that at least. Senators serve 6-year terms. So every 2 years, 1/3 of the Senate is up for election. Okay, currently in the Senate, as I mentioned, the Senate's currently 50-50. In November, 34 seats are going to be up for election. 3 of those seats are in New England. Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, Senator Hassan, I can never pronounce that, from New Hampshire is up for re-election, and Senator Leahy from Vermont is retiring. The Senate committee that's important for fisheries issues, for those that don't know, is the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. There are 2 New England senators on that committee, Senator Markey from Massachusetts and Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut. The important subcommittee is the Oceans, Fisheries, Climate Change, and Manufacturing Subcommittee, and both of those New England members are on the subcommittee. In the House of Representatives, as I mentioned, there's a 5-seat swing in the House. All of the House members are up for election again. There are 5 seats in Connecticut, 9 seats in Massachusetts, 2 in New Hampshire, 2 in Rhode Island, and 1 in Vermont. All of those members are up for re-election, and as I mentioned, or maybe I didn't mention, all of those seats are currently held by Democrats. The key committee in the House is the House Natural Resources Committee. There's only 1 New England member on the committee, Congresswoman Trahan. And while she's on the full committee, she is not on the Water, Oceans, and Wildlife Subcommittee. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but I think Senator Leahy, who is retiring this year, is the only senator who actually voted on the original Magnuson-Stevens Act. And in the House side, there is only 1 congressman who voted on the original act, which is Congressman Don Young from Alaska. And if you ever hear him talk about the Magnuson-Stevens Act, he'll tell you that he and Gary Studs from Massachusetts wrote the original bill, but they don't get credit for it. Only the senators get credit. And if you hear him talk, he'll tell you that the act should actually be called the Young Studs Act. He gets a big kick out of that. Let's talk a little bit about the big legislative issues that will affect fisheries if they move. Magnuson-Stevens Act, obviously, is the most important act for you guys. You may remember that Chairman Huffman from California, who's the chair of the WOW subcommittee, the Water, Oceans, and Wildlife Subcommittee, held a number of listening sessions before COVID hit. He held 7 in-person sessions and then had 1 virtual listening session, which was actually yours. You're the only one who got a virtual one. If anybody wants to go back and listen to that session, it is online. It was held in September of 2020, so it was quite a while ago. But if you want to go to it, Congressman Huffman's website has a link to Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorization, and there's a link to all of the listening sessions there. Since we met last year, Congressman Huffman, after the listening sessions, introduced a bill. It's H.R. 4960. It reauthorizes the act and makes a number of significant changes to the act. There is a second reauthorization bill that was introduced quite a bit before that, introduced by Congressman Don Young from Alaska. It would also reauthorize the act and make significant changes to the act. I won't go into too much detail on those unless you want me to, but I know the council was asked to submit comments on the Huffman bill and wrote quite a detailed and very good letter on issues in those bill that would in the bill that would affect how your council operates. There are also section by sections for both pieces of legislation. I thought they were up on the CCC website, but they're not. So I will make sure that for those of you that want them, that I either get them directly to you or I'll get them to Tom and he can circulate them. The most recent action on November 16th, the House Natural Resources Committee Subcommittee on Water, Oceans, and Wildlife held a hearing on several bills, including the 2 Magnuson reauthorization bills and also the Forage Fish Conservation Act, which was introduced by Congresswoman Dingell from Michigan. While the New England Council was not asked to testify, Mark Gorelnik, who was the chair at the time of the hearing, was chair of the Council Coordination Committee, testified on behalf of all 8 of the councils. And also your very own John Pappalardo was asked to testify and did so. Following the hearing, Congressman Huffman and Congressman Young both indicated that they'd like to see if there was common ground for a bipartisan bill. I believe they've spoken at least once, and I believe staff have met several times to see if they could come to agreement. I suspect they will not be able to come to agreement because the bills are quite different and move in different directions, but they may be able to narrow the differences. I've been told by committee staff that Congressman Huffman would like to schedule his bill for markup at the full House Natural Resources Committee during the first quarter of this year. That means either in February or March. That could get stretched out if discussions between Congressman Young and Congressman Huffman start looking like they're actually making progress. But as I mentioned, I think that's unlikely. I asked staff if Congressman Huffman was likely to put out a revised bill following all the public comment that was sent in, including by all of the councils and testimony that was heard at the hearing. I was told that was unlikely, and we probably won't be able to see any changes until the bill actually goes to markup. So it's unlikely we'll see those changes before a couple days before the hearing or before the markup. Having said all that, the House has been doing a lot. The Senate, on the other hand, has not indicated any interest in moving forward on Magnuson reauthorization. at the last two CCC meetings. Staff from both sides of the aisle in the Senate indicated that it was not a priority. And there is at least one provision in the Huffman bill, which is likely to cause Chairwoman Cantwell from Washington State some heartburn. So even if the House were to take up the Huffman bill, there are problems in the Senate. So to give you my obviously warped view of the bill or of the process, there's almost no member on the House Natural Resources that's been around for previous reauthorizations, and certainly no staff have been around for either of the reauthorizations. As a result, some of the lessons learned are being ignored and may cause problems later. Some of those lessons that at least I learned during the two reauthorizations that I worked on were to try and minimize litigation hooks, try to set reasonable timelines for new mandates, realization that every new FMP requirement involves amending every single FMP, and that's time-consuming effort for the councils, recognizing that the mandate should not exceed the ability of scientists to provide the data necessary, and trying not to overburden the agency without providing adequate resources. So as I mentioned, I worked on both last two reauthorizations. At the time, both Republicans and Democrats and House and Senate pretty much agreed on common themes. In 96, some of those key themes were reducing bycatch, protecting habitat, changing the rebuilding requirements to make them work better, things like that. In 2007, the key themes were trying to get some type of annual catch limits and accountability, and trying to get better science and involving the SSC more. Those were kind of common themes. I don't see that there's a lot of agreement on even common themes this year. Both the Huffman bill and the Young bill do have significant overlap on increased science, increased data collection, especially for recreational fisheries, and more transparency at the council level. But the big issues like, what do we do about climate change? Do we need changes in bycatch reduction? Do we need to change rebuilding requirements? And is habitat protection adequate? Those are not in sync between the two bills. There are a number of other bills that are out there that are of interest to the councils. H.R. 3764, the Ocean-Based Climate Solution Act, was introduced by Congressman Grijalva, the chair of the House Natural Resources Committee. He's a congressman from Arizona. There are significant fisheries provisions in those. That bill has actually been reported out of the committee, and a number of pieces of it have shown up in other bills, and I'll come back to that in a minute, but some of the provisions have been introduced as freestanding legislation, like the Forage Fish Conservation Act, and some of the provisions are popping up as amendments to bigger must-pass bills like the Department of Defense Authorization Bill. Another bill of interest is H.R. 3075, the Illegal Fishing and Forced Labor Prevention Act. That has a number of provisions that would affect fisheries. One of the provisions that is in that bill would require AIS for all fishing vessels, including tenders and processing vessels over 65 feet when they're operating in the navigable waters of the U.S. There's a bill that's going to come up before the full House this week. It's H.R. 4521, the America Competes Act. When that bill was introduced, it was originally 30 pages long, dealing with coordinated federal research initiatives. It's now almost a 3,000-page bill, including more than 100 pages of provisions that were put in by the House Natural Resources Committee. That bill is on the House floor this week, and there have been over 600 amendments filed. So it's not likely to move anywhere quickly. And because it is such a large package with a lot of controversial provisions, I doubt the Senate will pick it up, or at least not in its current form. I mentioned the Forest Fish Protection Act, or Conservation Act, excuse me, would place a number of requirements on the councils to protect forage fish. There's been concern raised that the definition of forage fish is too prescriptive, and I think most of the folks that have commented on it have noted that the differences in fisheries around the country would be better if councils could define what forage fish are. I don't think that that suggestion has met with much interest on Capitol Hill from the sponsor of the bill yet. The other concern that I've heard raised is that it's asking the agency and councils to protect forage fish based on information that's probably not available, such as the dietary needs of all other species, including fish and marine mammals. I'll mention real quickly, there's also a requirement that the secretary add shad and river herring to the managed fisheries under the Atlantic Herring FMP and the mackerel, squid, and butterfish FMP under the Mid-Atlantic Council. I mentioned the Forage Fish Conservation Act has been introduced in both the House and the Senate, so there's interest in moving it at some point, although, as I mentioned, time is running out. Just to mention real quickly some of the other bills that are out there. There's the Fluke Fairness Act, introduced by Congressman Schumer from New York. In both the House and the Senate, there was a bill to add Rhode Island to the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council. In both the House and the Senate, there was legislation that would ban the use of drift net fishing on the West Coast. In both the House and the Senate, there has been legislation introduced to authorize and permit aquaculture in federal waters. There have been a number of bills that would deal with banning some portion of shark finning. The large bill that I mentioned that's on the floor this week in the House includes language that would ban the possession, sale, or transportation of shark fins, but there is an exemption for dogfish. There's working waterfront legislation that's been introduced by Congresswoman Pingree from Maine. That is also in Congressman Grijalva's climate bill. There are a number of bills that have been introduced to deal with fishery resource disasters. And there have been a number of bills in both in the House and the Senate to change the way SK funds are used. Mr. Chairman, why don't I stop there and see if folks have any questions?
Okay. That's a lot of information. All of it, well, it is what it is. So, okay, let's go to the council. Anybody on the council have any questions for Mr. Whaley so far? Mr. Tracy.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And thanks, Mr. Whaley, for a really clear and digestible presentation. On the Magnuson reauthorization, I heard you say that you weren't seeing themes emerge, but and I might have missed it, but how does the reauthorization begin? What prompts that? And just kind of in that, and again, if you said that, I'm sorry, but how did this one begin and why did it begin and why now? I'm curious to hear about that.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to address that. Generally, acts of Congress, especially any that have money attached, are authorized for a specific amount of time, and funding is only authorized for a specific amount of time. If that authorization expires, which it has in the case of Magnuson-Stevens, it doesn't mean funding necessarily stops. It can still be appropriated. Let me back up. So there's a difference between authorizing legislation and appropriating legislation. Authorizing tells authorizing legislation tells agencies what they have to do and what they can do. Appropriations actually gives them money. So authorizers can say, we want NOAA to go out and build a Cadillac, and the appropriators give them enough money for a VW. So going back to Magnuson, the authorization for Magnuson ran out in fiscal year 2013. So generally when an authorization has been unauthorized for that long, there's a push to update it. And I know a lot of members of Congress feel that laws are living things and need to be updated and revised to meet today's situations. And I think that's the case in the case of Magnuson. A lot of people think the councils are doing a very good job and think that our fisheries are in great shape. There are others that think the councils have not addressed everything they should, and that they need to be told to do new things. For example, dealing with climate change. There are a lot of folks in the environmental community that think the councils need to take into account how the climate is changing when managing fisheries, and think that the councils need to be told to do that. Forage fish is another example. People in the environmental community think that forage fish protection has not been adequately addressed by councils. So anyway, as interest groups go to Congress or individual congressmen and tell them they think things should be done, members introduce bills that would address those concerns. Congressman Huffman, as chair of the Water, Oceans, and Wildlife Subcommittee, has taken the lead on that for the Democrats. Congressman Young, who's been around quite a while and as I mentioned, was one of the original authors of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, has some different views on what the councils can and should be doing, and he has introduced different legislation. So those two are kind of competing. Because the Democrats are in control, it's likely the Huffman bill will be the only bill that's moved on reauthorization. So does that help, or does that make it more confusing?
Very helpful. Very helpful. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. Sure. Chairman.
Okay. No problem, Alan. So just before we go on, I just want to remind everybody that the council has some rules on lobbying any particular outcome in Congress. I mean, questions are fair game today, but I just want to make sure nobody gets their toes in a little hot water. So with that, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the warning. Dave, thanks for the presentation. I have two questions, if I could, and I understand that it's difficult, if not impossible, to predict what's going to happen in Congress in this day and age, but I'm just curious your perspectives on a couple things. That the first has to do with the Magnuson reauthorization, and when you were discussing the challenges of passing appropriations bills in an election year, I think you indicated that the fact that it's an election year makes it harder to do the appropriations beyond continuing resolutions. And I'm just curious your perspectives on the ability to pass a fairly major piece of legislation like Magnuson reauthorization during an election year as well, because it seems like big things like that don't often happen in the in an election year, but I'm curious your perspectives on that and just the chances that something on Magnuson might actually get done this year.
Sure, happy to take that on. Let me start by telling you that it's not impossible. The 2006 and the 2007 amendments passed the House in 2006. Actually was signed in 2007. That bill had been negotiated between the House and the Senate for quite a while before the election, was actually passed by the House after the election. And despite the fact that the chair of the House Natural Resources Committee had been defeated in his election, so he was a lame duck chairman, lame duck congressman, and was still able to push it through before the end of the Congress and after the election. So not impossible. Having said that, I think the sides on this, it's not really sides, but the interests of different groups are far enough apart that I think it's unlikely we'll see something pass this Congress. It's not impossible that the House would take up this bill. If the House were to take up a bipartisan bill, it would put more pressure on the Senate to take it up. I don't see that happening, but anything's possible.
Got it. All right. So you're saying there's a chance. All right. That's good to hear. The second question has to do with money and appropriations, and I appreciate your pointing out some of the comments that Dr. Hare made yesterday about the challenges that lack of appropriations bills are posing to our ability to do resource surveys and things such as that. I know Dr. Hare mentioned yesterday that continuing resolutions were one of the challenges as far as resourcing the surveys. It sounds like from what you said, we're probably going to be continuing to be operating under continuing resolutions till the end of September. I believe the other thing that Dr. Hare was expressing some concern about was a shutdown, a government actual shutdown, and what that might do. And I know it's unfair to ask you, but can you give us your opinions on prospects of whether there might actually be a government shutdown during all of this? And just so we can understand how that might impact the Science Center's ability to do their surveys.
Sure. I think it's very unlikely we'll see a shutdown. The past shutdowns have affected both parties. People in the real world don't like when the government shuts down. People already have a very jaundiced view of Congress to begin with, and when they can't even get their one job done of appropriating money, people get angry. So going into an election year, I don't think members want to see that happen.
Got it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure. Dr. Sisseline. You're muted, Mike.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you, David. It is interesting to think about the likelihood of Congress acting to reauthorize this year. And as I think Jeff said, we're unable to really know the outcome of that. But to be blunt, if I had a bet on it, I'd say the odds are just slightly better than the Patriots winning the Super Bowl. anyway, more importantly, one of the ways that reauthorization or legislation of this type comes about is through actions by the agency itself. I mean, the agency or the administration has a legislative agenda. I'll ask the question to David, but perhaps the agency wants to comment. Is there any activity going on in terms of there being an initiative from the agency to express its views as to what amendments are needed? And if in fact that was occurring, what process would there be that might get some input from the councils? Thank you.
Well, I'd be interested to hear from anybody at the agencies, but Janet Coit did testify at the House hearing in November. She did not indicate that the administration is going to come out with their own reauthorization ideas. I would think it would be a little premature, since we have a new administration, a new secretary, and a new director of NIMS, that they would be able to push something through very quickly. And I don't think they've been around long enough to do that. It's possible that they could weigh in. Let me back up. Generally, when a committee reports a bill out, they will ask for administration comments. And when a bill goes to the floor, sometimes the administration will put out a statement of administration policy, or a SAP, Those don't happen all the time, and those would require some action by the House committee before either of those could take place. So short answer is I don't think they're going to weigh in, at least publicly. They may be weighing in behind the scenes. Committees often ask for technical assistance when they're drafting a bill. They may be talking to the agency about what things are feasible, what kind of money they need to implement things, that sort of thing. But I'm not aware that a lot of that's going on.
If I could, Mr. Chair, would you allow a brief additional comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, David. I suspect that your assessment on it is right on. I would mention that some of the important changes that have occurred in the past, for example, the 1996 reauthorization that included essential fish habitat, as you mentioned, the agency was very involved and, in fact, probably pushing very openly for that particular amendment. Raleigh Schmitten, as you know, put his own personal weight and interest behind it as the AA. So I do think that when the time is right, the agency can have a very significant and invaluable role in improving the act. But this probably is not the time. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else from the council at this point? Okay, David. Why don't you keep rolling, and we'll come back at the end and go to the public at the end. So,
okay, I wasn't going to go into a whole lot more. Obviously, the election year is going to have an influence on both appropriations and what other bills get moved. One of the problems that we run into in the fish world legislatively is most of the members of Congress are not coastal members, and a lot of times fisheries votes are viewed as a free green vote for members. So unless they affect bigger policy, a lot of times fishery bills like shark finning bills, to be honest with you, most people don't care. So some of these bills could get legs, but I'm guessing most of the big ones that I mentioned, including forage fish, the ocean-based climate bill, and some of the others, are unlikely to see any action this Congress other than potentially in the House. Just as a final wrap up, as I mentioned at the beginning, I work for all of you. So if there are things that you have questions about as the year goes on, please feel free to contact me. And as I mentioned, if there are things in the monthly report that you have questions on or think could be expanded on or written better, please let me know. Those documents are to help you all. So please stay in touch. And hopefully I'll get to meet all of you at some point in person.
Yeah, I hope so too, David. Thank you very much. So I just have a question. It's not a congressional action, but are you hearing anything about Executive Order 14008, America the Beautiful, 30 by 30? Is anybody on the Hill talking about that?
I know committees are interested. I know members are interested. My guess is that Chairman Huffman and others on the Democrat side in the House are supporting the administration on this. I think it's a little early to see whether people are going to come out outraged or not. I know when we're talking about closing areas, it may depend on what conservation means and what closed means. So yes, people are paying attention. I don't know that there's been a real push to do anything legislatively on it.
Okay, David. Yeah, I appreciate that. I just was interested if anybody was any rumblings about it. So, okay. So, anybody on the council have any more questions for David? Seeing none, anybody from the public have a quick question for Mr. Whaley? Back to the council, one last shot.
Mr. Chair, if I might say something, this is Tom.
I was going to come to you next, Tom. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. Just very quickly for the council members, I just want to give a plug for Dave Whaley. In addition to what he does that you guys see, he also does a lot of work whenever we have to provide a representative who testifies to Congress. You know, he pointed out that Mark Gorelnik from the Pacific Fishery Management Council was invited to testify in Magnuson reauthorization. Dave's expertise was critical in developing the testimony from Mark, and Dave did much of the work for that. So he's very helpful. One other thing I'd like to call your attention to is there is a Regional Fishery Management Council webpage, and on that webpage, we post comment letters written by the councils and by the Council Coordination Committee that are related to legislation. There's a specific page on MSA reauthorization. As has been pointed out by the chair, we are not allowed to lobby. But on occasion, congressmen will ask councils or the CCC to describe the impacts of proposed management measures, and we do provide written comments in those cases. So if you just Google Regional Fishery Management Council and hunt around on that webpage, you can find the links to see all the documents that many of the councils have written or that the CCC has written that describe the impacts of proposed legislation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Yeah, I mean, after what Tom says, you know, Dave is a really valuable asset to all of us, and he mentioned Janice Plant, which is also a very valuable asset. I appreciate both of your efforts. So without any further questions or comments, Mr. Whaley, thank you very much, and we'll see you.
Thank you.
How about that? Okay, very good. So our next topic is Atlantic Mackerel. We're scheduled